Welcome to Create a Way with Art Bundance. I'm your host, Wendy Fadan, and today I'll be interviewing author Chase Will. Chase is from Coshocton, Ohio, where some of the kindest people in the world live. He loves horror movies, punk and metal music, theater, and competing in amateur powerlifting. He's written for several horror websites, including Dread Central, HorrorNews.net, Scare Tissue, and Crypt Tease. So let's welcome Chase Will. All right. So welcome, Chase. I'm so happy to have you on this podcast. Thanks for being a guest. I'm very excited to interview you. And
thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to hearing what you say about the book Moving Through, a young adult novel that you have self-published. And please tell us more.
Oh, yeah. Moving Through is a coming-of-age book about a group of high school seniors as they're mourning the death of their mentor while inciting a school-wide rebellion. And it has a lot to do with not just growing up, but also it has a lot to do with things like depression, anxiety, and coming to grips with the fact that you're never going to be a finished work. And I feel like kids in high school, I feel like when you're high school, you're kind of pressured to become a finished work at some point. Like, there's always an end in sight. Like, you need to be this by the time you're done with high school. And in my experience, it's never really that.
I love what you say about being a finished work and thinking that you have to be a finished work. I really relate. That is a really cool message, actually, for young people.
If there was a deadline to become a finished work, I would never meet it. I would always get an extension on that deadline.
Wow, that's quite a metaphor too. I know, I think in metaphors too, of course. But like just think about, you know, when we're writing too. You know, there's, when do we know if it's over? You know, we don't know when. Yeah. Sometimes it's like, okay, it's done, and you have to just say it's done.
I always joke myself, like when I'm saving a file, it's like final draft, then in parentheses, haha, just kidding. And then five more final drafts later, I'm like, I promise, final draft. Never done.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. So I see by the long list of books that you've created, you definitely have this, Leo, dark, edgy kind of theme going on, this horror theme going on in your books. Can you talk a little bit about that and why you feel that's your niche, you know, that you've been attracted to?
Well, I've been a big horror fan since I was a little kid. I think it started with my cousin Nikki, actually, when we were driving around. She'd be blasting music like Ozzy Osbourne, Kiss, Insane Clown Posse. And I would look at those covers, and I was always fascinated with the visuals, which got me really into movies. I would literally watch like 5 scary movies a day all throughout grade school. My parents, really, really great parents, right? But yeah, horror's always been my thing. And although Moving Through, the book I'm promoting right now, isn't really in that genre, it's more of a, I would guess if you had to call it mainstream, that's what it would be. But I also write tons of horror under a pseudonym named Ash Crowlin. And I separate those two just because my separation process is, if it's something I would let my grandma read, I'll put it under my name. If it isn't, I'll put it under a pseudonym.
That's funny. That's great. Yeah.
I kind of get the best of both worlds.
That's right. Then you get to write about whatever you want and just separate the two.
Yeah. But yeah, Moving Through is pretty much like, this one I would say is for everybody. I label it as a young adult novel, but I've had plenty of people in their 50s and 60s read it and they love it just as much. But, you know, you always have to put something under a label because people got to know which box to put it in.
Yeah. Tell us more about the concept of Moving Through and really what really drove you towards that.
Well, the finished book came out in February this year, but actually wrote the first draft 14 years ago when I was a senior in high school. Mm-hmm. And at the time I was doing that, it was more of just a way to escape high school in my head because I loved writing. It's what I've always known I wanted to do at some level, whether it was a book, short stories, or just the guy who writes copy for a newspaper. Regardless, I wanted to be a writer. But the funny thing is, over the course of 14 years, the book was something I would always go back to between other projects, between schoolwork, between sports and working out and everything else. This was always a project that kept finding its way back to me. And it's a little bit odd because the book has to do with mourning and the grief process and losing a loved one. And I experienced that at some level at that point in my life. Like I'd lost grandparents and I had lost, like, you know, friends of friends and people that I didn't know super close. But before publishing the book this past February, I lost my little brother to cancer in 2019. And that was kind of what brought me completely back to this book, because, you know, in the grief process, you've got to find a place to put it all and you've got to find somewhere to express it. And this was something, it was a project that was really, really open for that. It was a good conduit to be there and work through it and really be real to the story, because having gone through that horrible feeling of loss, I wanted to help other people who've gone through it or are going through it, because it's something I think we all experience. It's terrible. But, yes, you know, by acknowledging through a story that, you know, it's okay to not be okay, like life doesn't always have these amazing happy endings where, you know, the day after the funeral, everything's fine. You see a big, bright light in the sky and you just know it's all going to be okay. Like in reality, I think it's important for people to know it's not going to work out like that. Like you're going to have days where you feel like you're fine. You're going to have days where it's like, okay, they're in a happier place. I miss them, but I can acknowledge they're gone and I can acknowledge this is what life is. And then you're going to have days where it's just a complete nightmare.
Yeah.
I know this is a book for young adults and maybe this sounds a bit too macabre and dark, but I feel like that's very important, because the one thing I really dislike about the mainstream young adult book industry is when they put young adults on a book, they're saying this book is safe. You know, we've gone through it and made it safe for everybody. We watered down all the emotion. We've watered down the heavy stuff. But I feel like that's kind of insulting a little bit, because I remember in high school, the books that got me into reading weren't the quote unquote safe ones. They weren't the ones that were talking to me like I was a kid. They were the ones that, you know, spoke to me with intelligence and said, you know, this is life. I'm going to tell you a real story. This is something that you can actually relate to without feeling condescended to.
That's so true. I really relate to what you're talking about. I did a similar thing with one of my books, actually, using it as a way to work through my own grief, losing my dad. So I really respect what you're doing there. And I totally respect your message, as I battled with that myself, deciding, okay, is this too heavy for a young reader, you know, as far as, you know, adding those kinds of elements and some paranormal aspects to it, as far as what I was writing.
Well, like there's some parts of the book that are a little bit out there. And as I was editing, I was battling with myself, like, okay, how real should I make this? Like, should I talk about the actual grief process, or should I talk about what a parent would want their kid reading about with the grief process? And in the end, I decided, you know, even if this book doesn't find a wide audience, I want to be as real as possible with grief, because the best thing you can do for yourself, I guess, in preparation for when you are going to feel grief in life, because we're all going to lose somebody at some point.
Yeah.
And the best thing you can do is know what you're in for and know that you're not alone, and know that these things that maybe seem odd to you, all the emotions and baggage that comes with it, I feel like you should know that you're not alone. You're not odd for feeling this heavy, heavy loss. It's an ugly thing. And, you know, just know that there are other people out there. You know that all the happy-go-lucky messages aren't the ones you should always be listening to. Like, I think the worst one I heard was, you know, they're in a better place now, which is a very well-meaning thing to say. And I appreciate it when people say it. It's very sweet of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, the point is they're not here. And that's what's heavy about it is, yeah, they're in a better place, but they're not here with me anymore. And that's the struggle, I believe.
Exactly. I think that's the wonderful thing about self-publishing too, is not having to worry about what a publisher is going to think, you know, what they might think would sell better, or, you know, might fit better into a certain niche. You can really speak your message and be true to yourself of what you want that message to be. I think that's the the beauty of self-publishing and being able to do it your own way, really. Yeah. Speak your truth. I love that.
Well, like, at first, initially, I guess like maybe 10 years ago, when I was not very deep into actually like finishing the book. At the time, I thought I was done. So I was sending it around to traditional publishers and, you know, sending it out to agents. I was kind of a naive 20 something at the time. So I was like, oh, this is going to be fast. But now it's like, it was like 3 years of sending it out, taking notes, editing it, you know, losing hope little by little and being like, this might never actually get in front of people. And yeah. One of the messages I got back from somebody, you know, most of the times you just get a form letter back, like everyone knows, that says, you know, thank you for sending your work. This isn't for us. Have a nice day. Yeah. You know, give up on your dreams. But
yeah.
No, like one I got back was just saying, you know, I feel like this is a young adult book that isn't for young adults. And I don't feel like it's going to find a wide audience or wide enough just because it's out there. And okay. I thought that was a compliment. I'm like, yeah, you're right. Mm. It is out there. Like, I don't want it to be just another young adult book. And, you know, after my little brother passed, he was only 20 and he had the most beautiful smile. He's a great kid, probably one of my favorite people I've ever met. Yeah. And one of the last things that he said to me, like he made me promise, you know, you're going to do this. You're a writer. You're going to do this. You're going to do this. You got to promise me you're not going to give up on it. Oh. And I really took that to heart. And I was like, if I can do it myself, I can make it look good. If I can make it look as professional as possible, if I can get an editor, I can figure out how these traditional publishers make their books work, then I'll get it out there one way or another. It's going to find an audience. Yeah. And I think that's the indie spirit that everyone needs to have going into this, is if you're going to be an indie author and you're going to self-publish, you have to take marketing and the look of the book into consideration, whether it's formatting, whether it's, you know, front back material. Those are all things that are very important, because it's terrible to say, but people will judge your book by how it looks on the outside, and they won't even look at page one if it doesn't look good.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm guilty of that too. Like if I'm browsing books at like Barnes and Noble, I'm not going to even pause to look at the ones if they don't catch my eye. And it's unfortunate because, you know, you can make book trailers, which kind of sell the book in a short way, like you would a movie trailer, but you know, you got to consider how often do people search for book trailers. And again, it's an ugly truth, but it's the truth. If you're going to be an indie author, you have to be a bit of a marketing person too. And you have to learn how to be a salesman.
Yeah, and I'm a designer, so I totally agree. You know, and that's the way I am. If I see a book that sometimes really it's the cover that sells the book for me, is I'm like, wow, I love this cover, and it makes me want to read the back of the book and find out more about it. If it's an illustration that, you know, if it looks like an amateur illustration or something like that, it might kind of turn me off and make me not even pick the book up, you know?
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. It's true.
Like if I can tell the author who's writing the book is taking a leap of faith for themselves and they're invested in this book, that tells me, okay, they believe in the story. They took the time to make it look good on the outside. I'll give it time. I'll give it at least 20 pages, you know, like I'll give it a chance.
Yeah.
And I got to say, in the past year, I've been reading like nonstop indie and small press books, and they are some of the best books I've ever read. And it makes me sad that a lot of people don't notice these. Mm-hmm. But the reason I've even found these books is the ones that I pick up are the ones that, you know, they have a beautiful cover. The author took their time to take that kind of stuff into consideration. And, you know, they're invested. Therefore, I should be invested too.
Yeah. And I think that's a great testimony. I hope more people listen to this and really open themselves up to the indie published world, you know, because there is a lot of really interesting stuff out there. I've just read books that that have been written that haven't even been published yet. And I'm like, it kills me.
It's sad. Like every time, like I read my friends' books all the time because, you know, I try to tell them, look, I just got kind of lucky here. Like I just had a brief winning streak going where things were kind of working out. Like, you know, don't take my opinion as word, you know, but it obsessed me a little bit because they write really, really, really well. And I just, I'm pushing them toward, okay, the writing is great, but writing is a very small part of whether or not this is ever going to get eyes on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is unfortunate because we all want to be writers. We don't want to be marketing managers. We don't want to be editors. We don't want to be all the other fun stuff that goes along with it. We just want to write. But
that is so true. Yeah, because
if you want readers.
Yeah, because that is the problem with a lot of writers out there, myself included. You know, we most of us tend to be introverts, and we are not really into sharing a lot. You know, we are like.
Do you get the weird anxiety sometimes, like when people are telling you good things about your work? You have this weird anxiety, like, do they actually mean that, or are they just saying it because they want to be nice?
Imposter syndrome. I get the imposter syndrome, like, oh, did you know, what if they read one of my other books and they realize I'm not really as good as they think I am, or whatever.
Like,
you know,
something that I didn't really understand until it started to happen, where I'm like, oh, you know, I believe in this book. I know it's good, but yeah. I can't, you know, take people telling me they think it's good. I'm like, okay, awesome. Tell your friends about it. Just don't, you know, tell me. It's just going to make me question the entire day.
That's funny. I used to be like that, though. I did used to feel that way, that I didn't know how to take compliments. I would get really shy about it, and I didn't know how to react, because I thought, well, what do I just say thank you? And just, or I used to have this bad habit where someone would give me a compliment and I would immediately put myself down.
Yeah.
And that's,
I think that's something a lot of people do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, someone told me one time that I really shouldn't do that. And it took a long time for me to try not to do it.
Like, I feel like it's a class they should start teaching in high school, is how to take a compliment, because it's a skill. It's a skill you're going to need in life. Otherwise you're in for a rough ride.
That's right.
Like, I'm lucky enough to be surrounded by friends and family who are supportive, and, you know, my friends, I keep the ones around who give me their honest opinions. Like, I don't surround myself with yes people at all. I don't want any, you know, sycophantic people who just tell me whatever I do is good. So that way, if they say something is wrong, I know there's something wrong. And if they say this is really good, I know they mean it.
Yeah.
And I think those are the people I would encourage, you know, writers. I'm not going to say aspiring writers, because if you write, you are a writer.
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
I would encourage people in that position to surround themselves with honest people who can give good feedback, not just thumbs up, thumbs down, but good feedback. Like, here's what worked for me. Yeah. Here's where I kind of fell off and lost interest.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, take the critiques with a grain of salt too. You know, remember that it's ultimately your book, and make it your decision. You know, do I agree with what this person's saying? Take into account who is saying it, and maybe it could be a personal preference on their end. You know, they could have some kind of bias about what you're writing. Who knows? But
definitely kind of sieve through those opinions and see which ones are valuable and which ones are just sometimes petty. Like, mm-hmm. My favorite petty one I've gotten so far is, like, someone was just reading chapter one and they say, you use this word 3 times in 3 pages. And I'm like, oh, okay. Did you enjoy the chapter? And they're like, yeah, but it really distracted me. I'm like, no, damn it. It's like, it's already out there. I can't go back and edit that now.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. So there are some things people will give you that you just got to learn how to take. Yeah. That's like, you know, learn to let things roll off your back, because there are going to be people, regardless of how much work you put in, regardless of how confident you are in your work, there are always going to be people who will find fault in it, no matter what.
Absolutely. You're right. Let's see. Well, before we end this, I'd like you to tell just a little bit more about your self-publishing process. I think that's interesting. You talked a little bit about that before we began here. I'd love for you to share how you made that happen for yourself.
Oh, well, it's actually started back freshman year of college. I was talking to some friends about that, and we were kind of just commenting on, man, if only there was an indie world for writers that actually worked, because at the time, you know, 2008, it didn't seem like there was much possibility. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think there was much even on Amazon like there is now, and there wasn't much process to it.
That's right.
So it was just kind of a, it was kind of a dream at the time. Like, wouldn't it be cool if I could do this myself and make it work? Hmm. And then, you know, like I said, after the tragedy with my brother, and I knew in my heart, like one way or another, this book is getting out there. I just decided, okay, I'll start a small press of my own. I'll make it as professional as I possibly can. I will, you know, dedicate myself to this, not just like a whim, like, okay, this is a quote unquote company now, I'll forget about it tomorrow. Like, no, if, when I put it out there, it's something that's mine with my name is on it and my work goes into it. And my hope for it is, it's called Mental Anarchy Press. And that's a phrase my friends and I came up with in college to kind of realize arts, no matter what you're doing, whether it's performance, theater, comedy, stand-up, you know, music, writing, you got to be kind of anarchic about it and give it your all and don't always worry about the rules. You know, throw away the rule book when you can.
I love that.
You know the rules, but throw it away at the same time.
True. Exactly. That's a good point.
In fact, I'm going to kind of steal from Stephen King here because I'm kind of pretentious and I'm going to do that. I'm kind of kidding about that. But he said, you know, when you're writing the first draft, write with the door closed. Like, it's for you. The first draft, do whatever you want with it. But, you know, at some point you have to let people see it, because otherwise you're not going to know whether or not it's a book or if it's just a dream.
That's a good quote. I love that.
I kind of paraphrased it. Okay. I edited Stephen King.
So it's a chase just to be clear, now. It's a
just
chase
to be
now.
Clear, I am not putting myself at his level. Just to be clear.
Hey, why not?
But if people are interested in like following my work at all, I do have a website. It's chasewill.com, and I actually just posted today about my next book. I just had the cover launch on there, and that one should be coming out, I believe, around Halloween, if not Thanksgiving.
All right. I think I saw that actually. I took a peek at your website, and yeah, pretty interesting cover. I gotta say, everyone check that out.
Yeah, this one's definitely more of a, I would say, college age book. It's got more horror themes in it.
Okay.
I like to think my books are for everybody, so I'm not going to put a label on it just yet.
But I could definitely see the Halloween edge there.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, hopefully you've piqued everyone's interest there. And please, and I will be adding a link to Chase's website down in the description. So please check that out. And Chase, I'm just so thrilled that I was able to have you on this podcast. And I just wish you the very best and keep on keeping on.
Well, thank you. You're a joy to talk to.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Wendy. You have a great day.
You too.
As usual, I'd like to end our podcast with an art assignment. And the statement that I wanted to pick out from this interview to use as a basis for the art assignment was Chase's statement that you're never going to be a finished work. And he was talking about this at the beginning when he was describing his book, that when you're in high school, you're so pressured to become a finished work. I can't help but think about my daughter. She's in high school right now, and she is she's going to be a senior next year. So there is all that pressure going on for her right now. So that really resonated with me, among other things. But I thought that that was such a powerful statement, and I'd really love for us to use that for the art assignment today. So I invite you to explore this idea of yourself and your life as a work in progress. I was thinking it would be kind of fun actually to create your own little mini poster that says, I am a work in progress. Just write that really big on a piece of paper. You can use bubble letters or whatever, and surround those words with images that represent your life, your journey, the in-progress work that's going on for you. You know, what are you working on right now? What are your dreams and aspirations? We may never reach our ultimate dreams or our ultimate aspirations, but the important thing is we have them. So please go ahead and get a piece of paper and write down those words. I am a work in progress, and see what comes out for you. So once again, thanks so much for being here for this episode. Thanks for listening. Please visit Chase's website. I will have a link down there below in the description. Enjoy your day and never forget that you can create a way.